Well, this week we've been observing the days of unleavened bread, and for me at least, the week has gone very quickly. But for the ancient Israelites, the week between Passover and the seventh day of unleavened bread was far from being a piece of unleavened cake. They had to move through difficult terrain, leaving the settlements of Egyptian civilization behind and moving off into the wilderness. Now, movie accounts of the Exodus story have aired on television and cable this week, and I find it interesting that most of these video versions of the story give the impression that the Israelites had to escape from Egypt. Many who write about the Exodus, in fact, if you look at various websites, refer to the story of the Exodus as Israel's escape to freedom. But is that really what it was? Is that the way that it was? Did Israel escape from slavery, or was Israel delivered from slavery? At first, the distinction between the two words may seem inconsequential. However, I hope that we will see today on this seventh day of unleavened bread that there is a great difference between which word we use to describe the process of coming out of sin. And so the title for the message today is short and simple: deliverance. Deliverance. Let's begin in Exodus chapter 3. We'll spend most of our time today in the Old Testament. Exodus chapter 3, we'll see that the seventh day of unleavened bread is about deliverance. But we have to build up to the point where they actually cross through the Red Sea. So Exodus 3, we'll start in verse 3. Here is the moment where Moses receives his commission from God to go to Egypt and to appear before Pharaoh. Exodus 3, verse 3. Then Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn." So when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Moreover," he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, "I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows." Now, the next part I'd like to paraphrase into words that aren't there. So just beware, I'm not inventing scripture. But I want you to notice what isn't said next. "So I have come down to encourage the Israelites to sneak out of Egypt when no one is looking." No, that is not what God says to Moses. This is not going to be a daring escape from Alcatraz, where the prisoners dig their way out with little spoons. That's not the way this is going to go down. Here is what God actually tells Moses, verse 8. "So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and all the other ites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I also have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come now therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Moses is here receiving permission from God to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. Why did Moses need permission? Let's look back at Exodus 7. Exodus 7, starting in verse 22. You see, 40 years earlier, Moses had understood, Acts. Let's go to Acts 7, 22. Sorry about that. Moses had understood that he was the one through whom God would work to free the Israelites. But Moses was not yet ready to lead the Israelites. So if you look at Acts 7, verse 21, "And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed, and struck down the Egyptian. For he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand. And the next day he appeared to two of them as they were fighting, and tried to reconcile them, saying, 'Men, you are brethren, you're brothers. Why do you wrong one another?' But he who did his neighbor wrong pushed him away, saying, 'Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you did the Egyptian yesterday?' Then at this saying, Moses fled and became a dweller in the land of Midian, where he had two sons. When 40 years had passed, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in a bush in the wilderness of Mount Sinai." So Moses had tried to act originally on his own to deliver his people. But God did not back him up at that point. And Moses had to run for his life. He did escape into the desert all by himself. He tried then to act without God's permission, and he accomplished nothing. Now, 40 years later, God decided that Moses had been humbled enough to receive the go-ahead. Now Moses had permission. "You may go to Pharaoh." He had permission now to do what he had tried to do on his own. As we know, of course, from the written account, Moses then tries to convince God to choose somebody else. He no longer wanted the job. Of course, God did not let Moses off the hook. He'd been preparing Moses for this purpose. So let's look ahead at Exodus chapter 13, starting in verse 3. Exodus 13 and verse 3. We're picking up the account now after the night of the Passover. Exodus 13, verse 3, "And Moses said to the people, 'Remember this day in which you went out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of hand the Lord brought you out of this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten.'" This was not an escape. The Israelites did not manage any of this on their own. They were redeemed by God. The Lord brought them out. Verse 4, "On this day you are going out in the month of Abib, and it shall be when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey," right? When he brings you into the land of the Canaanites, that you shall keep this service in this month. What service? The Passover. We will see in a bit that this is actually a prophecy, that God would bring them into the land of the Canaanites in this same month, though 40 years later, and that they would celebrate the Passover in the promised land. Exodus 13, verse 6. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. And of course, this is what we're commemorating today. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall tell your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up out of Egypt. It shall be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. So the exit from Egypt was God's work, not the Israelites' doing. And God did it with a strong hand. There was no deception involved, no jailbreak, no frantic dash. Let's continue in verse 17. Exodus 13, verse 17. Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And notice the next line. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. Orderly ranks. This was a nation on the move. There was no running. There was no hiding. This was being done for all the world to see the power of God's deliverance. Now, we know that the Israelites did leave in haste, but not in panic. Now, why did they leave in haste? Well, we know they did not have time to let their dough rise before baking the bread for the journey. We're aware of that. But why such a hurry to get out? Were they fearful that the Egyptians would try to stop them? Let's look at Exodus 12, 29. Exodus 12, verse 29. Actually, it was the reverse. It was the reverse. It wasn't the Israelites who wanted to get away quickly. It was the Egyptians who kicked them out. Of course, we understand it was also God's will that they leave Egypt according to his timing. But notice what verse 29 says. It came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on his throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, and all the Egyptians. And there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go, serve the Lord as you have said. Get out. Also take your flocks and your herds, as you have said, and be gone. And bless me also. And the Egyptians urged the people, great emotion, urged the people that they might send them out of the land in haste. Here's where the haste came from. For they said, we shall all be dead. This was a national disaster that had befallen the Egyptians, and they wanted the Hebrews out of their country. So the people, the Israelites, took their dough before it was leavened, because their neighbors are telling them, get out. Having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked previously from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. In other words, they complied, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. Verse 37. Then the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides children. A mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. This could not be missed. And verse 39, and they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. Again, we don't get that impression when we watch the movies about the Exodus. It seems to be that the Hebrews are panicked and so eager to get away. It's very likely they would have rather waited, taken their time, make sure they gathered everything important to take with them, leave in a somewhat leisurely manner from Egypt and its sins. But the Egyptians would have none of it, and neither would God. The Egyptians wanted the people of Abraham's God to leave their civilization and just go away. God had arranged it so that the Exodus was not a daring escape. It was more like an eviction. The Egyptians, who had enslaved the Israelites because they could not bear the idea of them leaving, could now not bear the idea of them remaining one day more. What a transformation. Now, even though the Egyptians recognized the power of the God of Israel, they did not want to abandon their culture, their religion, their civilization in order to worship that God. Oh, no. They wanted Israel gone so they could go back to living the way they wanted before all the troubles had befallen them. Let's go now to Exodus 14, starting in verse 5. Exodus 14 and verse 5. Things weren't going to be quite so easy. We know that after the Israelites had walked out, Pharaoh started to reconsider what had just happened. Verse 5, Exodus 14. Now it was told the king of Egypt that the people had fled. So we'll come back to that word. That the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we have let Israel go from serving us? Now, interestingly, the Hebrew word here for fled can sometimes be translated to flee. But it can just as likely be translated as to drive away or to chase out. It has the same meaning. So it was told here to the king of Egypt that the Israelites had been driven out of Egypt. It's been done. He himself had told them to get out, so this was no surprise. But now he'd been reminded of it. Yeah, we drove them out, didn't we? And what was his reaction? Why have we done this? Why have we let Israel go?
That was a bad move. Right? Up until this point, God had allowed Pharaoh and the Egyptians to believe it was their choice to let the Israelites go free. Of course, that was not the case at all. God now had to show Egypt and to show Israel and to show the world who really had granted deliverance to Israel. And that's the step we come to on this day. Let's continue in verse 6. So he, again, Pharaoh, made ready his chariot and took his people with him. Also he took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Egypt. So there were other ones, the non-choice ones, with captains over every one of them. This was a vast force. And Egypt was one of the most powerful countries in the world at that time. Verse 8, and the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with boldness. At least at this point, before they knew what was coming, they were still very bold in leaving this land. Verse 9. So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them camping by the sea beside Pi-Hahiroth before Baal-Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So now they were afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. This is the first time we see since the Passover that the Israelites are showing fear about what's going on. Verse 11, then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, why have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Moses, why have you, Moses, so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? This is all your fault. Verse 12. Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt? Didn't we tell you? It's what's going to happen. Saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. So clearly, even after all that had happened, some of the Israelites believed that Moses had been the one responsible for their freedom. And some probably still thought that it was the decision of the Egyptians that had granted them permission to leave. Verse 13. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. These people are not going to be around much longer. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Now that's an important phrase because we'll see it again. Israel was to hold their peace while they watched God deliver them. That phrase means in Hebrew to keep silence, to not speak a word. In other words, Moses tells the Israelites to shut up and allow God to deliver them from peril. Verse 15, and the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Mr. Fay has spoken on that topic previously. But verse 16, lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. So I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all his army, his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. They still didn't understand that. Even after the 10 plagues, even after the death of the firstborn, God knew they still didn't get it. Then they shall know I am the Lord, he says, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. The Egyptians had still not acknowledged the supremacy of the God of Israel. Verse 19. And the angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. So it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel. Thus it was a cloud of darkness to the one, and it gave light by night to the other, so that one did not come near the other all that night. And of course, they skip this in the movies too, that there was some delay between when the sea parted and it was dry enough to walk through. Verse 21. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians. And he took off their chariot wheels, so that they drove them with difficulty. Can you imagine all the chariot wheels just popping off while the chariots are charging through here? And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel. Let us do the fleeing, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." They finally got it. The Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. Only now at the end did they finally understand the truth about Israel's deliverance. Verse 26. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, on their chariots and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full strength, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. But the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Now, the Bible account does not clearly state this, but the understanding of the Church of God is that the crossing of the Red Sea occurred on this very day, the seventh day of unleavened bread. We understand that Egypt, with its culture, its religion, its very civilization, was a symbol of this world and its sins. And the story of Exodus teaches us that when God decides that the time is right to free his people from bondage, no prison, not even the greatest of nations, can keep them in. No walls are strong enough to prevent God's people from going out of slavery if God chooses to deliver them. However, not all walls are built to keep people in. Some walls are built to keep people out. And probably the most famous walls in world history are the massive walls of the city of Jericho. Archaeologists have determined that the city of Jericho was one of the oldest cities in the world, with sites of occupation going back thousands of years, certainly pre-flood habitations. It was very prosperous, and it served as sort of a gateway to Canaan for people who were traveling west. Let's go to Joshua 2. Joshua 2. Jericho is located just west of the River Jordan, and it was a city that the Israelites had to capture before they could move on to conquer the remainder of the promised land. So this is now 40 years after the Exodus. Joshua 2, verse 1. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go, view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country." So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, "Bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country." And in the story, we see how they were hidden, and she deceives the soldiers into thinking that they'd already gone. Let's go down to verse 8. "Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who are on the other side of the Jordan, Zion and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on the earth beneath. Now therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you will also show kindness to my father's house, and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death.'" And as we see, the men agreed. They swore the oath. Let's go to verse 18. "They give her a sign to display. They promise to do what she's asked unless," verse 18, "when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window," right? So unless she does this, the bet is off. The deal is off. "Bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household to your own home, so it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street," notice that, "inside the house they'll be safe. Outside they will die. Whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you made us swear." And she said, "According to your words, so be it." And she sent them away, and they departed. And she bound the scarlet cord in the window. Let's look back at Exodus 12 for a minute. Exodus 12, starting in verse 21. Doesn't this scarlet cord remind us of something that happened 40 years earlier? Exodus 12, 21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourself according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of the house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. It seems there may be some connection between the Passover and the time of the Exodus and Israel's attack against Jericho 40 years later. This scarlet cord was a symbol that death should pass this house. Let's go back to Joshua, and we will resume in chapter 3 and verse 6. Now, the ancient historian Josephus, a Jewish historian, stated in his book, The Antiquities of the Jews, in book 5, chapter 1, if you have yours handy, that the events at Jericho took place between the Passover and the seventh day of unleavened bread. And that it was during the seventh day of unleavened bread, on this very day, that God toppled the walls of Jericho. The Bible also states that these events happened just after the Israelites celebrated Passover. So let's look at that, Joshua 3. So Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people. So they have to now cross the River Jordan. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. When you command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you have come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan. So Joshua said to the children of Israel, come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, verse 10, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, and that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, and, of course, all the other inhabitants of that land. Verse 11, behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. Now, therefore, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man for every tribe. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. And, of course, we're familiar with the account. We know that that is indeed exactly what will occur. Let's go to Joshua 4, verse 16. After the water had ceased, they were able to cross on dry ground. Joshua 4, 16. Command the priests who bear the Ark of the Testimony to come up from the Jordan. Joshua, therefore, commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came to pass, when the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. So, of course, at this point, the story goes on to describe how God required the males of that generation to be circumcised before they came into the land. That had not been done during the wanderings of the wilderness. Let's continue in Joshua 5 and verse 10. Joshua 5 and verse 10. Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. So here we should pause to recall what God had promised back in Exodus 13:5. You don't need to turn there again, but we've already read this. Exodus 13:5. God had promised, and it shall be, when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, and so here they were, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, that you shall keep this service in this month. So God had commanded it and arranged for this to be fulfilled exactly according to that timetable. In Joshua 5 and verse 12, then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land, and the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. So it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with a sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, are you for us or for our adversaries? Right? Declare yourself. You're either for us or you're against us. And he said, no. Third option. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. I'm on God's side. We'll determine which side you're on. So Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? Then the commander of the Lord's army, who, by the way, allowed himself to be worshipped, which would indicate this is more than an angel, the one who would become Christ. Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take your sandal off your foot, for the place you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. Joshua 6, verse 1. Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. They were hiding in their city. They'd heard about these people. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have given you Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city. All you men of war, you shall go around the city once. This you shall do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. It shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up every man straight before him. Then Joshua the son of Nun called the priests. He didn't wait an instant. He had received his orders, and he's going to implement them. Then he called the priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant now, and let the 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord now. And he said to the people, proceed now, march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the Ark of the Lord. So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came up after the Ark while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now notice verse 10. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth, until the day I say to you, shout, then you shall shout. This is the same command that the Israelites were given by Moses before God parted the Red Sea 40 years earlier. You keep silent and wait for the Lord's deliverance. The same process, walking around the city, was repeated for each of the days of unleavened bread. And then we get to the seventh, to today. Verse 15. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early, about the dawning of the day, and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. On that day only they marched around the city seven times. And the seventh time it happened, when the priests blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things. This was a city of sin. This was a country of sin, and God was moving them out to make room for Israel. Abstain from the accursed thing, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So the people shouted when the priest blew the trumpet, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. Most of the people, in fact, all but one, followed the orders. Verse 25. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day, because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. So the sinful city of Jericho had blocked Israel's way into the promised land. So God himself intervened on this seventh day of unleavened bread to deliver his people. Jericho's mighty walls could not prevent God's people from going in to the land of promise. Just as all the powers of Egypt could not prevent God's people from going out of the house of bondage. Of course, there is a cautionary warning that I would encourage you to read about. There was one man named Achan who violated the order of the Lord. He kept some of the treasure for himself and for his family. And he was found out, and it resulted in their deaths. God ordered that he and his family and all his goods be burned. The attraction of those goods, goods of this world, were too strong for Achan to resist. He valued them more than the command of God. And as a result, he and his family perished. Contrast Achan's demise with the story of Rahab. Achan was an Israelite who turned his back on God's will. Rahab was a Gentile prostitute who had chosen to abandon her king, her city, her people, and we hope her lifestyle, to do the will of God. Rahab feared the might of the God of Israel. And by doing so, God granted deliverance to her and her entire family. Achan defied the will of God and suffered the utter destruction of himself and his entire family, all for the love of a little leaven. We've seen today that God acted during the Exodus to show to Israel and to show to the nations of the ancient world that he was Israel's deliverer. It was by God's power that his people were able to go out of Egyptian slavery on this day. 40 years later, on the same day, this day, God intervened again for the deliverance of his people. It was by God's power that his people were able to go in to the land of promise. Now today, fortunately, we do not face physical slavery by a human pharaoh, but we do struggle under the burdens of living in a world civilization that is guided by Satan the devil. Ancient Israel was concerned with their physical deliverance. We are concerned with spiritual salvation. God does not promise to preserve these fleshly bodies forever, but he offers the promise of eternal life in his family to those who will answer his call. Let's turn finally to Psalm 121. Psalm 121. Whether God directs his people to go out, the going out of his people, such as from slavery in Egypt, or whether he directs the coming in of his people, such as into the land of promise, we must trust him and not our own power for deliverance. God sent Jesus Christ into Satan's civilization to deliver us from the power of sin and death. And if we trust Christ and are faithful to obey him, we can boldly walk out of the kingdom of sin. Likewise, no walls can ever block our way as we walk onward into the kingdom that God has promised. Psalm 121, verse 2. We should be able to say these words, brethren, every day. My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall never slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore.